Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, January the 2nd, the first show of 2020. Welcome to the year 2020. It's going to be an exciting year, I think, to do these podcasts and talk to the many guests that we will have on the show. Obviously, it's going to be an election year, and that always dominates everything. So we'll talk a little bit about 2020. I've got some ideas of how the year will unfold, and I'll share them with you in just a second. We're also going to talk about this Iran-Iraq controversy, where apparently the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad was attacked by elements financed and let's say, organized by the government of Iran. That's pretty serious. That is very, very serious. And I would not be surprised if we see military retaliation against Iran here over the next couple of weeks. But there's a couple of big stories that I wanted to share with you as we begin the new year. Julian Castro, one of the Democrats running for president, has decided to drop out. He feels that, we talked about Julian the last time with George Rodriguez. You know, he kept making excuses for himself as to why he couldn't take off. And one of the excuses, of course, was that Iowa was too white. Well, that's a silly excuse. Iowa is indeed a majority white population and probably even higher than the country. But look, they selected Barack Obama in 2008, so they're capable of nominating or voting for someone who is not a white man. They did it with Hillary Clinton in 2012. So I just think that there is there's a sense here that Julian Castro wants to make a victim out of himself. But I think, in fact, his biggest problem was his message. That he had a message. Number one, it sounded identical to everybody else. There was nothing different about Julian Castro's message than Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Beto O'Rourke or the gentleman from New Jersey. I cannot keep track of all these people. Or the lady senator from California. There was nothing different about it. It was the same message of, hey, vote for me and we'll get you this for free. Vote for me and I'm going to shut down ICE or open up the border. The problem is that message is not registering for the Democrats. I don't know if you remember, but they had a debate, I think it was the last week of December or the same week of the impeachment in December, and they only got 2 million people in one channel, 4 million in the other channel. Altogether, they estimated that 8 million people watched the program either through television or streaming or whatever. That's not a lot of people. It's been dropping. These debates have less and less people. And I really believe the issue here is that these ladies and gentlemen, to be more specific, are just so predictably liberal. There's not one of them saying anything that sounds any different than the other. I mean, they disagree on basically – you know, they disagree on you know, whether or not to have coffee or tea, but they don't disagree on anything too more substantial than that. So Julian Castro is out. He may be back. You may see his name again at the convention as a potential VP candidate. But I'm not sure how much he has of value. I mean, if you're a Democrat and you pick somebody from Texas, then you're picking somebody with the intent of maybe winning Texas. But that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And we remember Michael Dukakis in 1988 when Texas was a lot more conservative and a lot more Democrat than it is now, you know, picking at the time the late Senator Benson, who was actually a pretty good Democrat. He was one of the better Democrats in recent years. He picked him for vice president, and that didn't do anything for him here in Texas or in the country in general. So goodbye, Julian Castro. I think my feeling is that he really blew it. He really blew it with his message, not with anything else, but with the message. He just did not have a winning message. And yeah, that's what happens when you don't get votes. Well, you drop out. So we wish him well. We wish him well. But, you know, we'll see what happens in the future with him. The other big story, too, this is a from the sports world, a big story. Don Larson, who is probably as well known as anybody in World Series history because he pitched the only perfect game, not just in the World Series, but in postseason history since they expanded the postseason. He passed away last night. He was born in 1929. He died in 2020. Don Larson had one moment in his career, and that was that perfect game in the 1956 World Series. The rest of his career was pretty much of a mediocre pitcher. But that one moment put him on the record books. And, you know, anytime you talk about pitching in the World Series, you got to talk about Don Larson and that perfect game in 1956. So rest in peace, Don Larson, who, besides being a baseball player, apparently was a guy with a pretty good sense of humor. Because every time I would hear him interviewed or whatever, he had a pretty good sense of humor. So we wish him well. We wish him and his family the very best. Well, let's talk a little bit about 2020. 2020 is almost here. No, let me take that back. 2020 is here. I guess what I meant to say was the election is almost here. Yes, that's different. But 2020 is right here. this is 2020. Let me repeat myself. 2020 is here. I was thinking more about the election coming up. And I think what you're going to see in 2020, I think that the year will sort of break down into three stages, not necessarily of equal length, but I think it'll be something like this. The first couple of months, it'll be all about impeachment. If it goes into a trial, and we don't even know if that's going to happen yet, that's another big if. But if it goes into a trial, and they have a trial in the Senate, you're looking at February 15th, maybe, when this thing comes to an end. President Trump will be acquitted, and this will end formally in the U.S. Senate. The problem for the Democrats is that as long as we're talking impeachment, we're not talking about anything else. And many of these congressmen and congresswomen elected in 2018 on the basis of we want to go to Washington to get things done, they don't have anything to show for their time in Washington. Yes, they've passed some legislation, but it didn't get anywhere in the Senate. So it's just, they tried, but they couldn't get it into the Senate or out of the Senate. So a lot of these members of Congress want to talk about something other than impeachment. Impeachment is really, I think, becoming a liability for the Democrats. And at the same time, I think it's helping President Trump consolidate his base. So first couple of months of the year, we'll be talking about impeachment. After that, perhaps even earlier than that, if the impeachment trial doesn't go very far, we'll be talking about the Democrats and the primary. I continue to believe that the Democrats are going to get to Washington and it's going to be a broker convention, meaning no one is going to have the majority of the delegates. And once that happens, then God only knows what the convention is going to produce. They could nominate somebody totally different, somebody who's not even running right now, or they could nominate, let's say, Bernie Sanders, because maybe he comes in with a plurality of the delegates, not the majority. And by the way, Senator Sanders is doing very well. He's raising a lot of money here recently, so he seems to be gaining some steam. So he comes in, let's say they nominate Bernie Sanders, and then they're going to force probably a very liberal vice president on Bernie Sanders, and it's going to be a ticket that will come out of Milwaukee rather crippled, I think. So by the time the Republicans get together, I'm not sure where they're going to get together. I don't remember right now. But by the time the Republicans get together, you're going to have a very crippled Democrat Party, deeply divided, because the convention is not going to be pretty. They're going to be deeply divided, and then President Trump is going to come in. By that time, he'll have a pretty good bunch of money because he's been raising a lot of money. I think the economy will be doing well. And he'll be running as the guy who says, hey, vote for me. Let's keep this economy going. That's a very strong message. It's an extremely strong message. And that's why I continue to believe that President Trump will be reelected. The only question I have is the margin of victory. Is it going to be like the last time when we were up till 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for some states to fall in? Or is it going to be a more traditional reelection where he will be reelected, let's say, by 10 o'clock Central Time or whatever? I don't know which way it'll go. I'm leaning toward the more easy reelection, but, you know, it's still a very polarized country, and you cannot discount the possibility that it could be a close reelection. But I think every day that goes by and you see these Democrats and you see the economy, I'm beginning to think that maybe it's not going to be that close. So it's going to be interesting. President Trump will be reelected. That's my prediction. We'll be right back right after we hear this. The music of my good friend Carlos Guedes. We have a link to his website on the show information. Click on that, and if you live in the Dallas area, you'll be able to see where he's been playing around town. I mean, a wonderful friend of our show and a wonderful musician as well. Well, the other big story is this Iran in Iraq controversy, where the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, Iraq, was attacked by what we now believe were Iranian elements. And that's pretty scary. That is really scary. When Iran starts doing stuff like this, what that says to me is that they're getting pretty desperate. I know they're having a lot of problems domestically. I know their economy is not doing very well. They're having a lot of problems at home. And I think this may be an act of desperation on the part of the Iranian leadership, maybe hoping to draw the United States into some kind of a military confrontation in the region. At the same time, though, you got to retaliate. You can't just have your embassy attacked that way. So we'll see what happens. But I have to say that I'm pretty happy with the way President Trump is handling this. I think he's showing restraint, but at the same time, the kind of toughness that I think Iran needs to hear. But I just have a feeling that we'll be talking a lot more about this story over the next few weeks. This is not the end of the story. I just don't think that they're going to stop now. They're kind of committed into attacking U.S. interests, and they're going to make a big mistake. That is, the Iranians. They're going to make a big mistake, and I think a lot of them are going to get blown up by President Trump once he decides to attack them. And I'm sure we've got the plans in place. I have no doubt about that, that we've got the plans in place that we could go at a heartbeat. You know, we can go in a heartbeat and attack them. I'm pretty sure about that. But so far, I think President Trump is correctly showing a little restraint because, you know, once you get into these wars, you have to be very careful as to what your military objective is and exactly where you're going to bomb and, you know, what other problems you're going to create. But so far, so good for President Trump. I like his attitude and what he's saying about Iran and this attack at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. Well, I have a post over at Babalu and also over at my blog about what happened this week, January 1959 in Cuba, 61 years ago, when Batista fled and the so-called revolution came in. Castro didn't actually make it to the capital city of Havana until about a week later. He kind of came slowly across the country in an extremely well-executed parade that took him all the way to Havana. But, you know, my parents, like a lot of other people, had maybe some expectations that things would turn out well, but they didn't. And that's why we left the country. And so we remember something that happened many, many years ago today, this week, 1959, a week that, you know, I think it's safe to say that changed my life in the sense that I'm here now. And I'm very happy about that. But, I mean, I could have stayed in Cuba and my life would have been totally, I mean, totally different than the one that I was able to enjoy here in the United States. So, as always, I say thanks to my parents for making the sacrifice to take us out of Cuba. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.